Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Welcome to Racing Across America for this Saturday morning. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. Let me hit you with promos coming up because we do have a promo here today at the Clubhouse Racebook. A lot of fun. The Pick and Putt promotion in honor of PGA Championship weekend. You can stop by the Clubhouse Racebook this afternoon and obviously enjoy all the racing action. Maybe grab a little lunch over at the restaurant. But also put your name in the bin. Folks randomly selected throughout the afternoon. We have a little putting green set up in the clubhouse, and you get a putter and a ball, and if you sink a putt, you win some dough. There are actually three holes with different money amounts, and there are a couple little bunkers in the back, so if you miss, you can maybe land it in a bunker for a consolation prize, but it's a lot of fun. This afternoon, Clubhouse Racebook Pick and Putt promotion, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Also today, there's a $100 online knockout challenge. Check out the website for more information there and your chance to win some extra dough on this Saturday. Same idea, win a little extra dough tomorrow at the Clubhouse Racebook with the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. That's tomorrow, Sunday, right here at the Clubhouse, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, today's show, we taped a couple interviews yesterday. We'll have Tom Bellhouse from West Point Thoroughbreds. Decorated Invader goes in the stake today at Belmont, but they also had a couple of nice stakes runners last week at Pimlico. Jackson Traveler behind Mighty Mischief looked pretty good. Lady Traveler in the Black Eyed Susan. And over the past few weeks, West Point has had some really nice debut winners that are worth kind of updating on. If you missed them, will alert you, and they may be nice sources to watch as the summer progresses, certainly. So Tom Bellhouse will talk a little bit about all of that. Also, we'll be joined by Jason Beam, who track announcer at a number of tracks. Colonial, over the past couple of years, he's had some time at Monmouth. We caught up to him. Right now, he's at Grants Pass Downs. He's going to fill us in a little on that, if you're unfamiliar with that track out in Oregon. But it was announced a couple of days ago that Jason is going to be the announcer down at Tampa. Rich Grunder had announced his retirement a couple months ago and had his last call a couple of weeks ago down at Tampa, the longtime voice of Tampa Bay Downs. But Jason was announced as the new announcer down at Tampa. Nice gig for him and a good decision by the folks down at Tampa. So Jason Beam coming up a little bit later. But we'll kick things off. Again, looking forward to the stake this afternoon at Belmont with Decorated Invader for West Point Thoroughbreds in the Seek again. We'll talk about that horse and more. Up next, Tom Bellhouse. Happy to be joined now by our friend Tom Bellhouse from West Point Thoroughbreds, the COO at West Point. They had some really nice winners over the past few weeks, and they had some nice performances in Stakes Company. We'll get some updates on those horses, but we'll start out looking at the Saturday stake at Belmont and Decorated Invader. But first, good morning, Tom.
Seth, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I'll just get a little overview from you as a guy who intimately involved in the game and popping around to all the racetracks and following your horses. We're, you know, over a year out for the pandemic and fans allowed down at Churchill, and it was fun to get the excitement even through the TV screen. Same thing this past weekend down at Pimlico. And I'm just curious your perspective, how things are kind of moving forward as we're, as I say, about a year and a half out now. But it seems like as we move into summer, closer to Saratoga, things are starting to get back to a little bit more of a normal scenario.
Yeah, it's an absolutely great feeling to be back at the racetrack in general, and to have the Triple Crown in its rightful spot of first Saturday in May, third Saturday in May, and on to June at the Belmont, as opposed to last year with different dates and different distances. But as a race fan and somebody who makes his living in racing, I mean, it's been a topsy turvy 15 months, and you know we're nothing but optimistic. And on average, I probably get at least 5 calls a day for people asking me what's the story with Saratoga, how we looking, and I've tried to tell everybody, you know, let's make it through the Belmont Stakes in 2 weeks. And I think we'll have a real clear picture of how Saratoga, an optimistic clear picture of what Saratoga will look like. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited. I, you know, as a fan, not being able to go to the races anytime I wanted and living, you know, I lived 2 miles from the track, and it was hard. It was hard driving by there on a Saturday and just whizzing down Union Avenue and not having to worry about any traffic or anything like it. It was almost upsetting, but we're really, really excited, not only about, you know, what's holding in store for Saratoga, but just for the industry in general. I feel like the amount of TV coverage we got last year with, you know, with baseball being on hiatus, and we really have introduced our game to a lot of new fans. And I think you're seeing it with the handle of how many people who got involved last year and are still showing up online and through the windows. And it makes me very optimistic about our future.
Yeah, you make a great point. There was clearly a silver lining to all this in the exposure the horse racing game got. And I've said the entire year, I think horse racing as a sport handled the pandemic maybe better than any other sport. And now that we're kind of coming out of this, and I agree with you, I've said the same thing to people. Let's watch the Belmont Stakes, then we'll have a better handle on Saratoga, because I assume Naira was looking over the shoulder of Churchill a couple of weeks ago and looking over the shoulder of Pimlico last week as they had fans on track. But I think they'll get a better handle on things down at Belmont for the Belmont Stakes weekend and how fans are going to work out and then figure it out a little bit better for Saratoga. But it's going to be fun to see. And for an outfit like you, these partnerships, boy, having the ability to get your partners on track is what it's all about, because watching all the partnerships, but you guys in particular, on days your horses run, I'll see you and the rest of the gang, Terry Finley, and everybody has a big smile on their face, and the owners, the partners can get to go in the paddock in the winner's circle for a winner. But there's just part of the fun of the partnership, besides rooting your horse down the lane and hopefully getting a winner, there's just the camaraderie, and that's been missing a little bit this past year. So we got our fingers crossed we'll get closer and closer to that over the next few months.
You know, it's funny you say that, Seth. I think one of the most depressing days of the whole summer last year, we ran a horse, a first-time starter. It was the first horse we ever started with Shug McGahee as our trainer, a horse named Martinez. And he ran a really nice second or third. I would think it was a second, but come running down the lane in a turf sprint and, you know, got up for second. And when the race ended, I mean, it was just this great elation of, wow, to have a first-timer at Saratoga run like that. And then the race was over and everybody left, and it was like there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to, oh, I can't go over to Pinnell's and sit at the bar and talk about my horse to everybody who listened. It was just, it was so sad. There was nowhere to go to just talk horses, you know. And the fact that, you know, we're coming out of that now, and I couldn't be more optimistic for the industry and Saratoga, but also our stable. I think we're really poised to have a nice summer, you know, knock on wood.
Yeah, and let's hit on some of that, and let's kick it off with tomorrow. The Seek Again at Belmont. We're taping on Friday, but this runs on Saturday afternoon, the Seek Again. And you have Decorated Invader in there. I've liked Decorated Invader really throughout the career. You had the big win when we were up in Woodbine a couple of years ago in the summer, and that was fun to see you and the partners up there to get the grade one early in the career. He had the nice three-year-old season. We're going to take a look, though, at the four-year-old debut. That was the Danger's Hour. And Mike Callahan and I did the stakes preview earlier this week, and Mike pulled up this replay and said, you know, check out the trip. And we're going to pick it up, and you'll see the West Point colors, and Decorated Invader is the number four. Gets, you know, kind of checked maybe a little bit on the turn and has to go back. And then when they hit the stretch, really just has to search for a room. And it was a tough trip. Give me your impressions and the group's impressions of this and the trip Decorated Invader had in the Danger's Hour and what that means going forward to the race on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think, listen, it was his first start back as a four-year-old. Obviously, we didn't run into any slouches in that race, you know, for a comeback race. Rinaldi, I thought, ran a huge race on the lead. You know, Trevor McCarthy put that horse out on the lead, and we were hoping to be much closer to the pace. That was the instructions in the paddock from Christoph, that one of the reasons he wants to specialize with this horse at a mile is he does feel he has a high cruising speed. And, you know, I don't think we need to be a, quote, closer in these shorter races, whereas like a mile and eighth and longer, he might not, you know, he might not have that kick that he's had before. So Rinaldi had a beautiful trip, and somehow when Rinaldi quickened, if, you know, you guys watched the replay, we were behind him, and somehow we didn't follow him. The plan was just to follow him, and the Kendrick Carmouche was riding the nine horse for Brad Cox, and that horse dropped over onto the rail in the turn, and we got shuffled, and we had a pause. And then, you know, obviously Chad Brown's horse, Delaware, who was, you know, who was an insane 10-1 in that race. I mean, he had been a really nice horse that had had a couple bad trips down to Tampa. So, you know, I thought he was the main danger to us. But somehow when we got shuffled back like that, it just left us too much to do. And listen, you can't take anything away from Delaware and Rinaldi. They're both really nice horses. We'll fight again against Delaware today. As you tape, but I think it's the move back to Rosario. Rosario fits this horse extremely well. Christoph and Joel have, you know, complete confidence in each other. It seems like they're really clicking together. So I'm expecting a big performance. I did, just as an aside, get a text yesterday from Andy Serling, who said for the first time ever he is going to pick Decorated Invader. So my knees got weak, but. You know, I think we're very excited to, you know, to get him going. I mean, this is a heck of a field for a non-graded stake race at Belmont, but hopefully it leads us into the poker and then the four-star Dave this summer. You know, Seth, I think this is the toughest division in racing right now. This older, you know, four-year-old turf horses, you have Gaffeau, you have Domestic Spending, you have Colonel Liam, you have all of these horses and all of these horses in here, Delaware and Get Smoking, and really, really, really nice horses that are, unfortunately for us, there's about 10 of them in the same division. So we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to improve to be a force at four like we were early in the three-year-old season.
Yeah, again, this is, you're right, a salty little ungraded stake. And you mentioned some of those big names in the division that Decorated Invader has already knocked heads with. And now they turn the page in January and have become 1 year older. And Decorated Invader, now a four-year-old, stepping into that older turf division, which is going to be fun and exciting this year and should play out nicely this summer. And we'll see what Decorated Invader does in the Seek again. But I also wanted to go back, talk a little bit about some of the performances over the past few weeks on the stakes side that are worth noting and certainly bode well for more summertime action. And let's go back to last weekend down at Pimlico, the Chick Lang. We're going to watch Mighty Mischief, the number two, win for Steve Asmussen, but also for Steve Asmussen. We can see on the outside there in the West Point colors, Jackson Traveler. And I use Jackson Traveler on top in here off of the win two back down at Oaklawn. Boy, that Bachelor down at Oaklawn was great. And Asmussen thought, I heard a post-race interview, maybe there was a little bit of a trip for Jackson Traveler, but he runs 1-2 in here. I think Mighty Mischief is going to be very talented in that three-year-old sprint division this year, which also, as I say, bodes well for Jackson Traveler. And then going back to that Bachelor. Talk a little bit about last Saturday and talk about that Bachelor performance too back for Jackson Traveler.
Yeah, I mean, when you run second in a graded stake, it's hard to complain. But it was a very, very frustrating race for all of us that was there. You know, Ired Ortiz, in my opinion, is one of the top two jockeys in the world, and he's one of my personal favorites. The horse broke on top, and Ired, you know, determined that he was going to let the other speed go and sit off. And, you know, there was inside speed bias at Pimlico all day Friday and Saturday, in my opinion. And when that horse got away, when Johnny came over on the six horse and we let him go, we break on top, and within a quarter mile we're shuffled to fourth. And then he ranged up, and he still thought he had a shot to win the race, but It was very frustrating, especially when you look at the way he won the Bachelor, where he broke sharp and just went out and laid it down and really took it to the field. So from that aspect, you know, when you're even money in a graded stake is very disappointing. But the horse is just a neat, cool horse. You know, he's a Munnings Maryland bred that we bought at Timonium a year ago. And, you know, he's just been nothing but fantastic, you know, four wins, two seconds, you know, one of the seconds we lost by a head when you know, he got bumped in the stretch. And I mean, it's just really the kind of horse that you love. And we'll just have to see. I mean, it's ironic. You know, horse racing is so fickle. We run second in this race, and we're really disappointed. We run third in the Black Eyed Susan with Lady Traveler, and you'd have thought we won the Kentucky Derby. We were so happy. You know, she ran the best race of her career, and we were just nothing but elated. Best number in her career, and really the most visibly impressive race, where she just went out and laid it down. And, you know, she got run down late, but just a great performance. Now she's great at stakes, placed now twice, being second in the Forward Gal and third in the Black Eyed Susan. And she has an incredible pedigree. She's a half to the great turf horse, Heart to Heart. And we actually bought her baby brother, an Arrogate colt, at the OBS March sale, and he's out in California. So we love the family, and we think that she's going to increase his value as she goes on, and when she becomes a, you know, we think she's going to be a graded stakes winner.
Yeah, we just watched the stretch run there, and she had the lead and got passed by Army Wife and Willful Woman. But when I replayed the stakes this past weekend, was recapping, I said all three of those I think are going to be nice players in that three-year-old filly division, which is a nice, fun division this year. Any plans, both Jackson Traveler and Lady Traveler, anything penned in for them coming up next, or as we move through the summertime?
Well, I know we've talked all along about the Amsterdam at Saratoga for Jackson Traveler, and how we get there will be determined whether we run another race. You know, I know there's been some talk about the Woody Stevens at 7 furlongs. I'm not sure that 7 is really his cup of tea, but, you know, it would be hard to pass up a grade one and come back. But that would be coming back again on 3 weeks rest. Lady Traveler, I think Dale is going to try to, you know, just figure out a way, the path of least resistance to make her a graded stakes winner. It's one of those, like, race like the Indiana Oaks or the Delaware Oaks or something that he's going to find a race to get her that graded stakes win. And then, but he's always been supremely confident that once she puts a race, she's never put a whole race together. And he feels that, you know, we're getting there. Like, this was a great first step and showed a new dimension for her. And, you know, the top three bottomed out that field. I mean, there really wasn't anybody else within 5 lengths of the top three. So that gave us a lot of optimism going forward, Seth.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I thought, as I say, all three of those horses ran very well in players in that division, which is, again, is a salty division this year, with Malathat looking pretty good a few weeks ago in the Oaks, and so we'll see what she does as well. But I also wanted to go, those are some nice stakes performances over the past couple of weeks, but I know you guys are active at the two-year-old sales and the sales in general. We'll hit on that a little bit later, but that means that you have first-time starters worth keeping an eye on, and we saw some of that over the last couple of weeks. So let's get some thoughts on some of those. Let's just go back really just a few days ago down at Belmont Park. It is a scratch reduced field of only three, but Little Drama is going to be the number four horse in here, trained by Steve Asmussen, ridden on this day by Kendrick Carmouche, a career debut effort and a nice looking win. Give us your thoughts on the debut effort from Little Drama.
You know, when the jockey felt good is when he gets off the horse and he says to me at my large girth, you could have rode that horse today. So, you know, he was, you know, it's funny, you go to the sales, we were at Timonium Monday and Tuesday, and we bought this horse at OBS March, and there must have been 6 people who came up to me on Monday that said, you know, I love that horse at the sale. And, you know, he wasn't the most expensive horse, but he was an Oklahoma bred by Dramedy, so it's not exactly a household name, but a really, really wonderful animal, and just goes to show you a good horse can come from anywhere. I mean, he was brought up at the Mayberry by the Mayberries down in Ocala, and they were always very high on this horse. He breezed beautifully, and, you know, listen, it was a three-horse field. I'm not going to, you know, sound like an amateur that it was incredible, but he did get an 85 buyer, and he did run a 13 on the sheets for a two-year-old in May. That's pretty spectacular, and you know, right now Steve's saying we might run back in the Tremont on Belmont Stakes Week, which would be a little quick back, but he felt that this horse is just so classy, and he really just did everything the right way. But I would hope that, you know, personally, I'd love to see him maybe as a Saratoga Special horse or a Sanford type horse.
Yeah, very good. Nice debut performance. Another nice debut performance.
Win happy to the outside.
Another nice performance was a few weeks back at Belmont, April 24th. We're going to watch the debut effort from First Captain. As you say, Shug McGahee training some of your horses now, and he trains First Captain Jose Ortiz on board. This was an auction purchase for you guys, and I want your impression, because I was in doing the handicapping show that day, and about mid-stretch, I thought, not today for First Captain. And then all of a sudden, he gets in gear and gets it going and gets the victory in the career debut. So as I say, I would love your impression on this debut win from First Captain.
So OBS April ended that Friday, and we had a little get-together out at the farm on Saturday morning. So I was driving to Tampa Airport, and I'm right on the rental car return line, so I basically pull off to the side to watch the race. And you know, at the top of the stretch and at the 3/16 pole, I went, you know what, this is exactly what I thought. You know, Shug, first time starter, he'll finish a nice third, and you watch, we'll be, you know, we'll be 2-5 next time out. And right when he hit the eighth pole, my phone blew up, and I was like, everybody's like, oh my god. And, well, what happened was my race was on delay, so all of a sudden he made that incredible move in the last 16th of a mile. And you know, listen, Seth, this horse isn't any secret. He cost $1.5 million as a yearling. He's probably the best bred horse, you know, that we've ever bought as far as curling out of the Bobby Flay graded stakes winner America. He looks like Curlin. They called him Baby Curlin all the way. And, you know, he had a little hiccup as a two-year-old, so we had to back off, and he needed some more time. But, you know, Robbie, we sent him he was over at Robbie Medina at Blackwood, Shug's longtime assistant. And, you know, he stayed with him for quite a few months, and when he was ready, he sent him down to Shug at Payson. And, you know, Shug has always been quietly confident, you know, about this horse, and he didn't disappoint. And I think that, you know, we'll look to run him back, I think, a week from today at Belmont. There's a other than. I think that'll be the perfect spot to get him started. I think the horse that he beat, the Todd Fletcher Shadwell horse, ironically, was an Into Mischief out of Hot Stones, and Hot Stones being Roddy Valente's horse, and we actually owned the half sister to this horse, who ran only once and won first time out. So there was a connection. We knew that this Into Mischief that Todd had was going to be a good horse, and the fact that we were able to beat that horse first time out really gave us a lot of confidence. And you know, I have a friend who said with this horse, he goes, you tell Shug to take Route 9, not the Northway. And I always found that funny. And I said, yeah, I don't think you have to worry about Shug rushing a horse. So,
yeah, and I mean, you almost saw that played in microcosm in the stretch run. You thought, oh, the horse is, and then all of a sudden, boom, gets going. So that was a nice debut win. We'll keep our eyes open there for First Captain. Also wanted to talk about one more first-time starter, and this one out on the West Coast. I have the chart going back to April 24th at Santa Anita Flight Line, and that was a nice debut win for that horse as well.
Yeah, I mean, this horse was a buzz. Ironically, that they both ran the same day. They both were bought as the same exact sale at Saratoga as yearlings. And both had issues as two-year-olds, and both made it to the track for their debut on the same day. If that isn't some kind of absolute oddity or the stars all aligned. But, you know, this horse won by 13 lengths. He got 105 buyer in his first start. I mean, you know, he's kind of one of those that is so freaky that, you know, you say to yourself, is this the one we've always waited for and dreamed about? He has tremendous breeding, being a tappet out of the Indian Charlie mare, feathered, and the whole female family is all the old Phipps, the Phipps family, Receipt, and all of those fillies that, you know, you got the foundation on both sides. And I tell you what, if he stays together, I mean, it's scary how good this horse might be. I mean, Sadler's won the Breeders' Cup. He's won all the big races, and he just said this horse might be the best he's ever seen. So of course, you know, I don't think there's anything pressing. I think he's going to push back and look towards Del Mar. He gave the horse tons of time after that effort. You know, he's not going to get lulled into, like, okay, I'm going to rush him along and run him in the one of the big races here just, you know, right away. So, but he thinks this is a horse that could be, can be, you know, career-making.
Yeah, we just saw the stretch run there, and that certainly was a very good-looking debut, as you said, with an eye-popping number for a first-time starter of that ilk as well. So that was nice. I'm going to ask you a nuts and bolts question, because the other replays we were watching, we were seeing the distinctive West Point Thoroughbred Silks, the black star on the gold background. Flightline was wearing the green silks, though. And some of these horses, you're in partnerships with others, as you are with Flightline. How is it decided what silks get worn in what races? And for some horses, do you trade silks race to race?
Yeah, I mean, it's they rotate most of the time. Those silks were the Hirona silks by Hironas Racing, John Sadler's big client. You know, we own that horse in partnership with Hironas, Sienna Farm, Mr. Manganiello, as well as the breeder Summer Wind. So you're going to see more and more of that going forward, Seth. When we buy these big horses, that, you know, we're gonna partner, especially a company like ours. As big as we are, we still don't raise capital in advance. So, you know, there's a ton of exposure when you buy one of these living, breathing animals. The fact that we're able to partner up and create these alliances and buy these horses, maybe even, you know, hopefully more talented than we could have afforded on our own, is just a, you know, small price to pay that you switch out the silks every once in a while.
And am I not correct? I'm thinking I saw Terriot. I forget which sale it was, but you guys had made a big bid, and I think Terry said he was pretty much working the phone as the bidding was going, trying to make sure that he was going to get the horse. And to do that, you were kind of pulling people in as things were going at the sale.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example. We were at the Timonium sale on Monday, and we were lucky enough to come away with the sales topper, just an incredible quality road colt from one of the old time families of Lane Zen, of, you know, Weekend Surprise, the Farishes, all old time Lane Zen on the bottom. And you know, Terry's on the phone. He's, you know, we know where we stand going in. We have some person into this. Let's say I got a person in for, we call it a leg, 25%. And then as the price is going, you want to make sure, okay, we're still in, everybody's still good. You know, okay, it gets to a million. Okay, it gets to 1.5. Now, he had an idea. You know, we thought actually the horse would go for more money, but we had an idea that, you know, it was going to be at least in the mid one. You know, 1.5 million to 2 million range. And then, you know, you have your hard stop too. You're just like, hey, we went as far as we can go and just not our day. But we got lucky. I mean, we really did. A couple of the people that came, there were a lot of things happening in the industry that week, and maybe they weren't as fired up to spend like they normally would. I expected the horse to go for 2 million the way the rest of the sale went. The rest of the sale was extremely robust.
And, you know, I talked to you at the beginning about the industry and how things have, you know, kind of are moving more towards normalcy. And you guys are very active at all the sales. I'm curious as how the sales have kind of moved more to normalcy. I mean, are the people on the grounds as opposed to bidding by phone? Or how have the sales this year been a little bit different?
Yeah, we've bought parts of 18 horses so far this year, two-year-olds, Seth. And I don't think that, listen, I just think that the sales have been incredibly strong. I think that elusive $50,000 to $125,000 horse that we're all searching for just doesn't exist this year. I think if you have a nice horse that, you know, you got 30 into and you're looking to get up to 75, all of a sudden he's going for 150. I just think that the smaller foal crops and then the bounce back with the economy and from COVID, people are out there and want to buy racehorses, and they're paying for quality, and they're really, you know, some of the stuff that you're seeing that might go for $50,000, you know, might not be worth $50,000. Let's just put it that way. Everybody has their own price point. But, we love to buy at all segments of the market because we have partners in all segments, and it's been extremely difficult. You know, I watched a couple of young bloodstock agents at this last sale who I'm friendly with, and, you know, they had orders for 3 horses at $100,000 each ballpark, and they struggled. They struggled to fill those orders just because when you saw something they liked, all of a sudden it was going for $150,000, $200,000, just as a blink of an eye. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens going forward. As the years, you know, we come out of this COVID and into the fall at Keeneland, but we've been very fortunate and made some great alliances and to be able to buy as many horses as we have. But you know, I'm not going to downplay and say it was easy to buy at these sales. It was extremely competitive at every one we went to, and yeah, we got run over quite a few times. I mean, OBS April, I think we bought like 4 or 5 horses the first 2 days, and then the last 2 days we got shut out. We just couldn't get anything.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Tom, before I let you go, I also want to touch on, you had a Derby runner this year. You were in on Obesos. 5th place finish in a salty field. I thought that was a good 5th place finish for Obesos. And I read within the past couple of days, the thought process is maybe the Ohio Derby for that one. Just update us a little bit on your Derby runner, Obesos.
Well, if you ask Greg Foley, he says Ohio Derby. You ask Terry Finley, he says Belmont Stakes. No, I think it'll probably be the Ohio Derby. And Greg is a really, really great trainer. We've had a little bit of a relationship with him before, but we've tried to get together. We owe it all to my colleague Jeff Lifson, who's really had a great relationship with the Foleys. And we tried to put something together a year ago to get in on some stuff with them. And then right around Christmas Eve, this horse, Obesos, broke his maiden in an off the turf race with a son of Orb. So it wasn't like they were backing the truck up, you know, everybody wanted to buy him, but Jeff had a good feeling about it, and the Foleys did as well. And we were happy to partner up, and lo and behold, you know, he got us to the big dance and definitely didn't disgrace us. So,
yeah, like I say, I thought he ran well. That was a salty field, and he ran a nice 5th in there. So we'll look for him next time out. Tom, as always.
5th or 4th, huh?
Yeah.
5th or 4th.
There you go. Tom, always appreciate the conversation. Certainly wishing a lot of good luck with Decorated Invader. And I always tell people to swing by the West Point Thoroughbred website. You can Google it and find out information about partnerships in general. And you guys, it's really a nice website, not just for partners, but for folks who are kind of interested in the game and maybe thinking along those lines. You have a lot of great information there, kind of looking forward to races. Your horses are going in and following up on the race results and whatnot. So you guys do a great job there. And again, I'll tell people to swing by the website. But appreciate the visit. Good luck on Saturday afternoon, and we will talk again.
Thank you, my friend. You have a great weekend.
Appreciate it. Tom Bellhouse from West Point Thoroughbreds.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Very happy to be joined now by Jason Beam. We've had him on the show over the years from various locations, but when the news came out a couple of days ago that the Tampa position had been filled by Mr. Jason Beam, I said we have to have him on this weekend. Jason, good morning.
Jeff, good morning. How are you guys?
Very good. Good morning and congratulations again. Rich Grunder, the longtime announcer down at Tampa, announced his retirement, a couple of months ago, and then had his last race call a few weeks back. I liked Richard Grunder. I'm a huge fan of Tampa. Unfortunately, I haven't been there in a number of years, but I used to be fairly regularly. My dad was retired down in the area, and I would go visit him and make an annual visit or two to Tampa. And Rich Grunder's name always reminds me of T-shirts and shorts in January. So I liked Rich, but they couldn't have made a better decision to put you in the booth. As I say, we've talked to you during the years from various venues and enjoy your race calls. And you have to be thrilled because, again, you know, you go from November to May, a great gig that takes a big chunk of the year down in the Florida sunshine. And when the announcement was made, and I'm assuming you knew ahead of time, what were your thoughts and what was your emotional feeling when the announcement was made? You got the Tampa job.
It was pretty amazing. The funniest thing was they called and offered it to me on my birthday, and so it was a very good present. When I answered the phone, I was thinking, boy, they can't give me bad news on my birthday, right? But it's obviously it's unreal. It's such good racing, and it's such a neat place, and you know, the quality of the product for horse players has just gotten better and better there, and their handles, you know, obviously incredible. So there was no negatives. I mean, the minute I heard about it, I kind of joked that you never thought that job would be open because you kind of just assumed, that he would be there forever. I mean, he'd been there for so long. And so when I heard it was open, I sat and thought about it for a while, and I go, I mean, I can't think of a job that would be a better fit. And with the tracks that I already call in the summer, the schedule is just, it's too perfect.
Yeah, as I say, it's a great gig with the amount of racing. And as you noted, the quality has really improved. The turf racing is great. Wintertime, you get the name trainers coming over from the East Coast to Florida to fill out some races. So it is a great gig. I'm curious, what's the process? Is there an audition, or you have so much product already out there that people can draw from? How do you apply for a race calling job?
Yeah, it's certainly not the formal process that it is in a lot of, in terms of, you know, regular job. Like you don't fill out an application, but you know, you submit a resume and a demo reel, and I think you're right that, you know, most of the parties involved probably knew a lot of the names that applied and knew their work. And so I know they Margo said they had dozens of applications, and you know, I know they interviewed a handful of folks, and I was one of the fortunate ones to get an interview and got the job. But as far as the decision making, I guess you'd have to ask them. But you know, I think for the most part, especially for guys that have been around for 10, 15, 20 or more years, you know, the work is kind of known. It's maybe more of, you know, is this person a good fit to come work with us?
Yeah, and as I say, I'm happy for you, and I think you're going to be a great fit down there at Tampa. Let's also talk a little bit about some of your other gigs. And I think I'm correct. I think you're up at Grants Pass Downs now, up in Oregon. And for our folks here in the Saratoga area, some folks may have heard the name, but I think they're familiar, probably unfamiliar with the track itself. Give us a little overview. And I pulled up some photos we'll show as you're talking about Grants Pass Downs. And as we're looking at this first photo, am I correct? Is the infield a little unique with soccer fields?
Yeah, so the little backstory on Grants Pass Downs, it was a fair meet for years, like a three-week fair that would end on the 4th of July, and just the county fair. And you know, Oregon has a nice fair circuit. I think there's four or five fairs. But anyways, when Portland closed, it opened up the commercial license. There's only one commercial license available in Oregon. And so Travis Borsma, who's the founder and president of Dutch Bros Coffee, he's a Grants Pass guy and has been a racing guy. He owns horses and just always liked it. So he went, partnered, you know, and decided to buy the place, and they've put a ton of money into it. It used to just kind of be a dust bowl with a football grandstand, and I mean, they widened the track, they put a whole new surface, they hired Steve Wood as the track man who was at Santa Anita for years. I mean, they've really, really invested in the product, and it's neat to see it paying off. I mean, our handle, even 2 years, has jumped, you know, 500%. We did $1 million between the 2 days last week and for week one. So been really cool. And yeah, the soccer field, they had all this space, and Travis, you know, he has kids that are teenagers that play soccer, and he thought, well, this is a perfect place to put, you know, I mean, there's three full size fields, but for like little kids, you know, they split it up into, you know, three fields on each big field. And so on the weekends or when racing's not going on, it's in full time use as a huge soccer complex. And it's just a really neat thing. I mean, Travis is a big community guy, and Grants Pass is a small community, and he has certainly put his money, you know, into the community, and it's really, really neat to see.
Yeah, that's, as I said, I was pulling up some pictures, and I thought, wait a minute, there's a bunch of pictures of kids playing soccer, and then I got to the wide view, and I said, oh, it's the infield. So that's very good. A little unique out there. And I'm guessing, give us what your game plan will be now going forward. Will you still do kind of the circuit, Tampa, and then pop up to Grants Pass, and then over to Colonial?
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, the timing for me is it's almost stupid how well it all works out. The only hiccup is Tampa has the summer festival in June and July, so I'll have to miss the last 2 weeks of Grants Pass. But other than that, like Grants Pass and Colonial are about 3 weeks apart between ending and starting. Colonial is about 3 weeks before Grants Pass fall starts, and so like each little break I have like 2 or 3 weeks to travel and or have a little break, and so it's really, really an amazing schedule, honestly.
Oh yeah, that is fabulous. And let me ask you, because you know there is a little bit of a vagabond situation with a lot of race callers, given that you know there's really a handful of year-long kind of spots you could fill into. But that then leads into what I was also going to ask you. It's a little bit of an unconventional career just because there's a limited number of players. So what got you into the racing game? What got you into the calling game? And give us a little bit of the background that led you into the announcer's booth.
Yeah, my dad was a horse player. I grew up in the Seattle area, so Long Acres was where I used to go as a little kid. And they closed that when I was 12, and Emerald didn't open until I was about 16. And so I just always went with my dad and loved it and really enjoyed it. He got sick in the early 2000s, and so I would take him to the races literally up until he died. And after he passed, I just kind of kept going. And I got a job at Emerald after college working in the press office and just, you know, running charts over to the handicappers and stuff like that. But, you know, it was enough to where it really just got me interested in it. And then in 2005, Vic Stauffer had this amazing call of the American Oaks, a horse named Cesario won. And I just thought it was like the greatest race call. And the hair on my arms stood up, and it was just like I went and bought binoculars the next day and started practicing at Portland Meadows that next winter. And the guy at Portland got sick for a day, so I got to fill in and use that as my demo tape and got hired at River Downs, and I was kind of off and running.
And I will ask, because having talked to other announcers here on the show over the years, did you have the normal where you're up on the roof or somewhere obscure with the binoculars and your tape recororder?
Yep. No, that was 100%. I was at Portland. The announcer's booth and press box at Portland Meadows was kind of a separate building on top of the building. And so I would, you know, between races, I would go hang out in the Equibase room because I was friendly with one of those guys from Emerald. And then when the race was getting ready to start, I would walk out the back and out onto the roof. And the stewards used to always smoke out there, so I'd always, you know, talk to them for a few minutes. And eventually, I did that for like 6 months. And then the general manager at the time, a guy named Dwayne Usick, because there was like a little rope that basically was between me and falling four stories. And he finally said, you know, I do not want any kind of lawsuit. It's wet up there. So they moved me into the grandstand, but they were so supportive. They saw I was coming every weekend, and, you know, they eventually gave me a chance. And then the next year, the guy who was there while I was practicing, he had a regular kind of job, and he couldn't do it because they were moving to a weekday schedule. So I kind of slipped right in.
And again, where was your first call? And talk about maybe the first call or the first few calls. And I ask this because I don't think they do it anymore, but Maryland used to have a day. It was hilarious because it would pop up on YouTube where they would have local sports media people come in, newspaper writers or TV sports people, and each of them would get to call a race. And it was fun because you could see they had studied the night before, and they would be golden for about the first 100 yards, and then it would completely fall apart. And you could tell, like I say, they had studied, but it's much harder than it seems. So talk about your first race call. Where was that? And how was the beginning few days of race calling?
I, my first, they did it right for me. They sprung it on me at the last second. And so I was up there practicing like a normal practice day, and I did the first few races. And after the fifth race, Mike O'Brien goes, "All right, you're doing the next race." So I had 15 minutes to be terrified. And so I remember when they came on the track, Portland was a booth where you had to open the window to, because you had to see the down the turn and stuff. So you could hear the speaker's feedback. And I remember the first time said, they're onto the track for the first or the sixth. And I'm like, oh, God, that I'm out there. And so it was a 6-furlong race, which I was told is like not the best thing, because you want to, the mile races, at least they start in front of you. You don't have to use your binoculars, and it feels a little normal. But my hands were shaking so bad, I pinned my hand up against the windowsill, and everything kind of went okay until the turn. And then I realized I'd forgotten to breathe, and I just straight ran out of air. And but I got through it, and then like 2 weeks later, they let me call two more, and those ones went a lot better. And then there was the day he was sick. The funny thing about the day he was sick, I did the whole card, but I completely butchered the sixth race. Like, there was a space of like half a length to the next horse, and I said, and it's three lengths back, and I stopped, and I go, three lengths? I mocked myself on air. So when I did that, when I had them make the tape for my demo tape, I told the guy at TV, I said, just do the first five races. And River Downs hired me off of that, so they didn't know that the sixth race was a complete torture fest.
That's hilarious. Have you called other breeds? Most of the announcers have at one time or another gotten a quarter horse race, certainly, or have you ever done the standardbreds?
Well, Portland used to run quarter horses, and actually we still do at Grants Pass. We run a couple each day, so that's a pretty regular thing. I've called three races at the Pomp with my friend Gabe Pruitt when I was down at Gulfstream West. And I also called a full day filling in at Century Downs in Calgary, Alberta, doing the harness. And it's such a different thing, and it's not my language. And I got yelled at repeatedly for saying that they were running into the far turn, or this one's running away. And like, you can't say running. They're not running. I did one Greyhound race, the Tucson Greyhound. That was my other claim to fame.
And I'm curious, what's easier, what's harder? And I was going to relate it to the Greyhounds, but having been a guy who went to the dog track for years when I was down in Florida, I would think Greyhounds the same thing. Man, the quarter horse and the Greyhounds, it's so quick. And Greyhounds, it's pretty much you're just popping off the numbers. So what was it like quarter horse and Greyhounds as compared to, harder or easier as compared to thoroughbreds?
Quarter horses, I don't think are harder. They're just different, and because really you're only paying attention to kind of the top three, because a lot of the races, those they kind of separate themselves. When there's a mad scramble or something, quarter horses can get pretty intense for sure. But the Greyhound was tough, and this isn't to knock Tucson Greyhound Park. The lighting wasn't especially good, and so seeing them on the backstretch was a challenge. And I remember there was one of the dogs had a really funny name, and I had a really cute line all set, and then that dog broke dead last, and I never got to use it.
you mentioned something that I had never thought about, because I've talked to announcers, as I say, many times, and a lot of the obstacles are more visual. The booth is just in a funny spot, or there are trees in the infield. But you mentioned something, if you're at a track where you have to open the window, the sound from the speaker system may come back. And being a guy who's been in TV for years, and having been in situations where I've had to record things or been on TV, and you're wearing headphones, and you're getting that kind of replay a second or two after you say something, man, you really have to get used to that. So talk a little bit about, I'd never even thought of that, but some of the obstacles you've run into over the years in the announcing game.
Well, Grants Pass, I'm lucky because it's such a smaller track that the speakers, it doesn't feel like a delay at all. It just feels like I hear an echo of what I'm saying. And so I actually like having some feedback, just because it makes you kind of remember that you're on. Sometimes when there's no feedback of any kind, you just don't feel like you're, broadcasting out. And so I kind of like that. Emerald used to have that in the paddock where it was about a half second delay, and you would start talking slower because you thought that the speakers were behind you or something. It takes a while. You almost have to learn to just kind of ignore those. But I mean, like the hanging out the window, like Gulfstream Park West, Pete had to have a little 6-foot wooden thing built so we could properly lean out the window to see the top of the stretch. And the same at Woodbine, like Robert Geller actually had a like a beam put in midway through the window because you have to lean out, and he was terrified of falling out because there's nothing underneath in there. And so there's a lot of those situations that, you know, and like, you know, Arlington and Fairgrounds, John G. Dooley, he's got, you know, 50 trees throughout the course. There's a lot of little things like that. But, you know, it to me, that's like kind of part of the charm. But like at Grants Pass, I can't stand up and call because the rafters from the grandstand, if I stand up, they block the whole far turn. And so I have to I sit down when I call there.
That's great. I always love those stories. And we talked to you last year on the program when we were out at the National Handicapping Championship, not this past year, obviously, with the pandemic, but the prior year. And it was fun because you were out there kind of covering the event yourself, and we had you sit in with us at one point. But it was fun because one of the days, the horse named in your honor, Beamy Award, was running, and I believe it won. And I can remember taking a picture of you rooting the horse home. And we had Jeff Bloom on with us earlier that year, or before that, the prior up at Saratoga, and we were talking about the horse, and I said, how'd you come up with the name Beamy Award? And he said, I wanted one. So I was kind of playing to that. Talk a little bit about how fun it was to have the horse named after you. And again, I'm correct, right? It won when we were out in Vegas.
Yeah, he was 5-1 that day. He was a big horse for a lot of the tourney because it was in a mandatory. That was the other thing that was kind of cool. Jeff is just a really, really neat guy, and he's always been super nice to me. And you know, he would send me messages every once in a while, like, "Oh, I love, you know, the award show," or, you know, "Good job calling the race." I mean, just a good guy. And he named the horse. He actually gifted me a small share of the horse, and so I got to actually be an owner on the horse, which was really cool. And he broke his maiden in his second start at Oaklawn Park. It was Oaks Day of 2019. In fact, it was the day before my first day calling at Monmouth, and I remember watching from my hotel in Jersey and screaming my brains out because he was 13-1. But really, really cool thing. He got claimed away from Jeff, but I kind of followed him throughout. And Jason Barkley, who claimed him a couple starts ago, actually just retired him. He had a little knee issue, and they just decided, you know, it was best to retire him. He has a new home. He's moving to Tennessee to be a trail horse for a family who adopts a lot of horses from Second Stride, which is a really, really great group in Kentucky. So I want to give them a shout because they were the facilitators of Beamy Award's second career.
Ah, nice. Very good. Glad to hear that. And for folks who aren't familiar, the Beamy Awards honoring the best of racing Twitter, and I'm putting best of maybe in quotes there. Yeah. But again, for folks who aren't familiar, it was kind of a viral little thing when Jason would come out with the awards night every year talking about, and it was fun and funny. And as I say, it became kind of viral to the point where some people in their Twitter bio would have, "Hey, I'm a Beamy Award winner." When you started the Beamy Awards, did you kind of foresee that? And how fun did it become when it really took off like that?
No, I just thought it was kind of a funny idea to do a kind of a mock award show with, you know, like the best Twitter fight. And, you know, I think Marty McGee won best hair in racing the first year. And nobody will ever question that one. But, no, I just thought it was kind of something fun to do. The backstory on that was I had just taken the job at Louisiana Downs like a week before, and I almost didn't do them because I didn't want them to think that they hired some screwball that was going to do that on social media. You know, but they did hire a screwball, so I went ahead and did it. And it was really popular the first year. The second year, it completely exploded, trended nationally. And it was the day Rudy Giuliani dropped out of the presidential race back in 2015 into 16. And I'll never forget the trending topics. Like, number 5 was Rudy Giuliani. Number 6 was Beamy Award. it was always meant just to be a fun night for everybody to get together and have some laughs, and it was really a successful thing in doing that. For me, I just thought it was kind of losing its edge, and you know, if I was going to keep doing it, it would have had to really evolve, I think, into like more video and more stuff, and I just didn't have the time. And so I just thought, from a creative standpoint, kind of best to leave while it was still good and popular and all that. So yeah, the Beamies, it will live in our memories.
Yeah, and you have announced you're retiring the Beamy Awards. There was a lot of disappointment out on racing Twitter when that announcement was made. But I can totally understand, being a video guy myself, I own a video production company, for years, and I've done little videos, and certainly now on Twitter I've done some of those types of things too, and it takes a lot of time and creative energy to make something as entertaining as that was, so I can certainly understand. But, and I'm kind of whispering now, is there a potential in the future for maybe, you know, a one-off reboot or something, you know, like the Friends reunion that's coming up? Folks are looking forward to that. Do we have maybe at some point, can we look in the future for a Beamy Award reboot?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I never say never. That's certainly real.
That's
I mean,
what we wanted to hear.
Lord knows if I get canned from a bunch of jobs, I might need to do it. But, you know. Well, I mean, we had Run Happy sponsor the last year. Little Red Feather was. I mean, I left money on the table with it for sure. But nah, I just from a creative standpoint, it was one of those things where it just wasn't as fulfilling as it was. And you know, I kind of like to. I mean, that for me, doing fulfilling stuff is the whole point of my career. And so I just wanted to move on to kind of the next thing, which is kind of getting back to his calling. And obviously, I still get to do my podcast, so I get that broadcasting outlet, which is great as well.
Yeah, no question. I'm sure a lot of work went into it, but it was very, very entertaining, certainly. And we had talked to you going back a few years when you put your book out, and before I let you go, I just wanted to let you tout the book a little bit too, because I went on Amazon and people can still get the book, Southbound. So talk a little bit about the book.
Yeah, it's been, 7 years, I think, since Southbound came out. The publishers were happy with the first 5 years, so we got to re-up the contract. In fact, funny enough, I hadn't really thought about the book that much, but they're finally getting around to doing an audio book, and I actually, later today, I'm talking to the guy who's going to do the voice acting for it, and so that should be coming, I would think, in the next few months. But yeah, it was a horse racing novel. It was kind of a fantasy fiction of, like, what would happen if I just said, screw it, no work, no nothing, I'm going to be a professional horse player, and it goes about as expected.
Well, we can all relate to that. So, yeah, check out, as I say, if folks go to Amazon and type in Southbound and your name, Beam, they'll come up with the book, and they can check that out as well. Jason, appreciate the visit, and as I say, really looking forward to you in the booth down at Tampa. There'll be plenty of opportunity to listen to you at some of the other tracks in the meantime. But and we were during your whole interview there, they were putting up your picture and your Twitter handle as well, at Beamy Awards. I'll tell people to swing by and follow you on Twitter as well, because there's plenty of entertainment to be found there also. But wanted to have you on just to talk a little bit about the new gig and the career in general, to introduce people to you who may not have been familiar. As I say, we've had you over the years, but it's been a while. But was happy to hear you were getting the job, and so congratulations.
Thanks, Seth. That means a lot. I appreciate you. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Jason Beam, the new announcer at Tampa Bay Downs and more. And thanks to Jason for taking the time for the interview. Again, we did both of our interviews yesterday, but Jason, good selection for Tampa. He was clearly excited about it, and I don't blame him. Great gig in the wintertime to be down in Tampa, and it's a nice chunk of the calendar for a race caller. And as Jason said, it's going to work out with his schedule with a couple of the other tracks he does very well. So, again, congratulations to him on being named the new announcer down at Tampa Bay Down, Jason Beam. And, again, you can check on Twitter at Beamy Awards. And as Brian Addo said on the Handicapper Support earlier, if you check out his Twitter feed, he puts nice, funny videos up occasionally. It's entertaining. It's worth following, certainly. And again, also thanks a little bit earlier to Tom Bellhouse from West Point Thoroughbreds for updating us on some of their nice runners over the past couple of weeks. And looking forward to this afternoon, Decorated Invader in the Seek again at Belmont as the feature race today. So again, thanks to our guests this morning on Racing Across America. Couple of notes, and we've mentioned it already this morning on the Handicapper's Report, but do want to reiterate, $620,000+ in the rainbow at Pimlico. It's not a mandatory pay. They have, about a week left, a little more than a week maybe at the meet, and the mandatory will come up at the end of the meet, certainly. But just want to note, when you get up to this kind of a level, $625,000, the consolation could be okay. Yesterday at Pimlico, the rainbow paid $1,000. There was 5 really logical horses and one you kind of admittedly had to search for a little bit. I want to say $37. So there was one you had to figure out. But you did that. You got $1,000 for the rainbow. And as I say, when this balloons up, we see it happen at Gulfstream all the time. It just, and Gulfstream is the track where this jackpot bet really takes off. It's not as popular at other tracks, but, and I was just looking up on Pimlico press release on this total, and this is a state record, a Maryland record for the rainbow purse, the rainbow pot, with over $600,000. Again, Constellation can pay decently. So if that is something of interest, keep that in mind. Big pool down there for the rainbow at Pimlico this afternoon. Mentioned it on the handicappers report, but do want to mention again, talked about it yesterday a little bit because the news came out a couple days ago. But for folks who, again, don't tune in until the weekend, Canadian Racing coming back. I know a lot of our customers like Woodbine. I like Woodbine. Good product. The 20-cent increments on the pick plays can make it kind of fun, and you can put together intriguing tickets for a reasonable amount of money. But Woodbine coming back. First, it'll be Woodbine Mohawk on the Sulky side. They'll be back in action on June 14th. Woodbine on the Thoroughbred side kicks off on Friday, June 18th. Some of the other tracks in Canada also coming into action about the same period. Fort Erie is going to start June 14th, and Rideau-Carlton June 17th. So again, we're roughly, you know, 3 weeks away from things kicking off up in Canada after the shutdown, the pandemic shutdown for most of this year at this point. And it has been unfortunate and a tough situation for folks who have horses. You know, you got to feed them, take care of them. They got to have to go on the track and work out to stay healthy. But there was just no purse money coming in for the horses and the horse people and whatnot. And so it's been a tough situation up there. So we're, again, happy for everybody up in Canada that racing getting back underway again within the next 3 weeks or so up in Canada. Also want to alert you today, Clubhouse Racebook, pick and putt. Come on down in honor of PGA Championship weekend. Put your name in the bin. Randomly selected folks throughout the afternoon will get a chance to putt for the dough on our little putting green that we have set up this weekend at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. There's also a $100 online knockout challenge. Swing by the website, and maybe you can pick up a little extra dough this afternoon playing the challenge. And tomorrow here at the Clubhouse Racebook, maybe you can get a little extra dough with the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. It all happens right here at the Racebook tomorrow. 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, I'm going to wrap it up, but I'll be back in, you know, an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. Going to take a look at a little Belmont today, a little Pimlico, some Gulfstream. There is an evening card at Churchill. Keep that in mind if you're a Churchill fan. They will have Downs After Dark tonight. And you'll be able to play the entire card as Thoroughbred Racing is available tonight here on the network and via CapitalOTBBet.com. And, of course, that will include that nice Churchill Saturday night card. So keep that in mind. That'll obviously come up a little bit later on. But, as I say, during the afternoon, plenty of racing that we'll be looking at on OTB Live in just about an hour and a half or so. So appreciate your tuning in this morning. We'll see you a little bit later.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as serious horse players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a serious horse player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
Recently, Capital OTB paid out more than $30,000 to a select group of Capital OTB account holders. 10 lucky patrons shared over $9,000 through our online Pick 5 bankroll, and Capital OTB's Kentucky Derby Syndicate players took home an incredible $20,750 in total earnings. For your chance to be part of future Capital OTB promotions, simply open a new Capital Bets account. Just log on to CapitalOTB.com and sign up today.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.